Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Chertletau from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. I'm coming to you today from Pasadena and the office of Margaret Hambleton. Margaret is our current president, but also the vice president for corporate compliance and chief compliance officer for Dignity Health. So, Margaret, first of all, thank you for having me over.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
So today we're going to talk about something interesting that happened and a different way of getting people to think about compliance. At the 2018 Compliance Institute in Las Vegas, your CEO, Lloyd Dean, gave a really great, rousing speech. I think you probably left the room with at least 1,000 people saying, how do I get him as my CEO?
I did.
It's got to felt great. But one of the things I want to focus on was one thing he talked about is he mentioned 5 questions that you have taught him and his team to ask themselves before they make any decisions. So first, can you recap what those 5 questions are?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So the 5 questions are, does the idea, the new process, the new technology, whatever it is, does it require an exchange of anything of value with a physician, a patient, or other referral source? Does it change the way services are documented, coded, billed, or reimbursed? Are there any improper motives or conflicts for doing the thing, it? Particularly interested in conflicts related to clinical decision making. Does it require sharing protected healthcare information or business confidential information outside of our network? And does it require evaluation by any other experts in the organization, whether that be legal, human resources, revenue cycle folks, et cetera?
It's interesting. They both can lead, all 5 can lead to complex answers, but they're very simple questions that you can get a sense of pretty easily if you're sitting in a room with, you know, other executives who've been dealing with things. How did you come up with these questions?
Well, it's funny. One day I was, every day we get our daily briefing. Times Dignity Health has been in the news and, you know, new technologies, new things we're doing. So I was reading the daily briefing and came across a little article on a new technology that we were implementing related to secured texting and communication between caregivers. And I'd never heard of it. So I asked the question to the lawyer who was working on the deal, and I said, tell me about it. Tell me about what this is supposed to be doing, because I don't know anything about it. Oh, no, we've had a compliance review on it. Don't worry about it. All right.
At that point, let me just interrupt. Was it hard to say, wait a minute, I run compliance and I haven't looked at this yet?
Well, we do have various compliance processes.
Okay.
In this case, it had gone through what we call a privacy impact assessment. The privacy impact assessment showed that there were no issues related to privacy. As he was telling me about this new technology, it's this great app, we put it on the doctor's phone, doctors can talk to other doctors, doctors can talk to their nurses, it's all secured, et cetera. And I said, does the doctor have to actually be using it for a patient of Dignity Health? Oh, no, doctor can use it for any purpose. They can communicate with their partners, they can communicate. And I said, well, aren't we giving them an application that has some value? And shouldn't we consider it from that perspective? They said, oh yeah, I didn't think about that one. And so when I went back to my compliance person who did the PIA, the privacy impact assessment, I said, one of the things we really have to do is think about not just the question in front of us, but more broadly, the big 4, Stark and Kickback, HIPAA, conflicts of interest, and all the things that go along with conflict of interest, like medical necessary services, et cetera, false claims, coding, reimbursement, billing, et cetera. So when you looked at this one, you only looked at privacy. We need to think about the other questions as well. And so I went to my staff, so I developed a little presentation, went to my staff, and I said, anytime you look at any matter, doesn't matter what question you're asked, I want you to think about these 5 things. The 4 big laws that we worry about in healthcare and who else needs to be involved. And so we vetted it, we talked about it, we talk a lot about it in my team. But it made a lot of sense for us to ask, when we start asking those questions, to ask management to ask those questions as well. Because that gives them a clue as to when we need to be involved in a different way. So it's not just the PIA. We want to look at it from a Star Kickback perspective. We want to look at it from a conflict of interest perspective, et cetera. So for my staff, it's making sure that they're issue spotting in a broader way than they may typically do. For management is, do I need to get compliance involved? So that I just want them to think about those things so they know when to knock on the door.
Yeah, which is really a great thing to do, because again, it starts infusing within their thinking the compliance terms, knowing what sort of the limits and potential risks are, and then you don't have to come calling up and stopping a process
right.
that's already in place. So when you talk to business people about asking these questions, when do you suggest they ask them? Obviously, you don't need to do it for every single business decision you make. Are there sort of tripwires that you encourage them to follow?
Well, you know, anything that's new. So a new process, a new technology, a new procedure. If it's new, I want them to think about the questions. If it's a standard policy or a standard process, something we've done 100 times, they may not need to. We may need to still do some analysis, but generally speaking, established processes don't require that level of at least inquiry.
And then how do you, who's the one who most make this? Obviously, the more senior executives are making the bigger, more complex decisions, but is this something that's been extended down to middle and lower level managers as well, this whole five question ethos?
We're still working on it. We are still working on it. But I am pleased that the operations executives and strategy executives, those are the ones that I really want to make sure are thinking about the five questions, so that they're the ones who are most likely to encounter new ideas, technologies, deployment of care models, et cetera.
I got sort of ahead on my questions. I realized before we talked about how they're using it, but the question gets to be, how did you sort of train people to start doing this? I mean, how did you make that from a neat idea to let's get them all to do this all the time? Because obviously, you know, when your CEO is standing up there not looking at his notes and saying these questions, you did something right to get everybody thinking in these terms.
Well, you know, it's a pretty easy concept. It's a pretty easy idea. I find I can infuse it in almost any conversation. So when I'm doing a presentation, I will typically throw it in someplace, and it's a conversation. I just did a presentation with care coordination, put the five things in there. I did a presentation with quality folks the other day, put the five things in there. So I find that repetition works really well. And I'm in front of enough audiences that I can throw it in, and people are start just get used to hearing it over and over and over again.
Yeah, and repetition gets in many ways a bad rap because we think we don't want to hear things over and over again. But all the studies show people do forget, and you know it's important to take advantage of sort of the things that aren't about that, where you can work that in. That makes a good thing for both of, you know, obviously your five questions as well as for anything else. So your CEO obviously loves these questions because they help him quickly and easily know whether he's getting into areas that might be problematic. What's been the reaction from the rest of leadership?
I don't know that they've recognized as well as Lloyd did or has. I don't know that they've recognized that they're starting to ask the questions.
Oh, interesting.
But
that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No. It's not a bad thing at all.
Thing.
So
right.
I feel like I haven't had to pound the questions into them or, you know, demand that they think about them and ask them. I think they're starting to have, I think they have heard them enough times now that they're asking them just...
In their own head.
In their own heads, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good thing. I mean, that's, you know, sort of the dream of compliance is to make it so people have started internalizing the actions and behaviors and the thinking so that they'll follow up. So, first of all, is there generally any advice for anyone else thinking of trying the same approach in their organization? I mean, any place you stumbled along the way or anything that you said, wow, this made this so much more easy than I thought?
Well, you know, it's funny because originally I just thought it was a tool for my compliance folks. It was just an opportunity because, you know, as folks come into the compliance world, my model tends to have to use generalists versus experts, but many of them came as an expert in HIPAA or an expert in research compliance or an expert in some other aspect of compliance. And so I used it as a tool for orientation, essentially, so that as they become more and more of generalists, as they learn more and more about Stark and kickback and false claims and other things, they can use it as a tool to issue spot, so that they think about very, very consciously, think about, you know, I'm taking my HIPAA expertise off the table here. I'm looking at it from other perspectives as well. And I always thought it would only go that far until I started realizing that as I talked to managers about it, or when managers ask me, when do I invite you? I use the same questions with them. Found that it really serves a very nice dual purpose.
That's great. And I think it's worth noting here that we're giving, you know, very healthcare specific examples, but most any other industry, I think you could find sort of five questions there. You know, it's not in terms of Stark and anti-kickback is, am I creating a conflict of interest for our business partners or our employees,
right?
Correct?
Yeah, and I, you know, I think any industry is going to have its big four or big five, or you know, for healthcare where I live, Stark and a kickback HIPAA conflicts of interest. So I think any industry can think about what are the top, you know, is it FCPA, is it GDPR, is it, what are the things, what are the top issues, top laws that they most worry about and want people to be able to think about whenever they're making compliance decisions.
Well, thank you. I love this insight. I love that example at the annual meeting. So thank you for sharing more about it here. Thanks to all of you for taking the time to listen in. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspectives.